Welcome to the Parent Equation Podcast with me, Aisha Murray. This podcast series is full of inspiring stories from working parents who are passionate about designing a life that works for them and their families. Working parents like you who want a purposeful, rewarding career alongside a balanced family life. Today I'm joined by Nikki Freshwater. Nikki is the HR manager at the Port of Tilbury, is a mum of two, and before actually going back into, I suppose, normal employment, was also self-employed for many years. So it'd be interesting to hear your story, Nikki, about how that kind of flip happened. So welcome.
Hi.
So I think the first thing I want to start about, I suppose, talking to you about is actually that flip. So normally, people I talk to, on the most part, have been in employment, sort of contracted employment, if you like, and then decide to change career and start out by themselves and do something for themselves. You've gone the other way around, and you were self-employed for several years, and then I got back into kind of paid employment. So what happened there?
So I suppose I went to work for myself with the intention that I would have the business sort of set up before I then had children. I actually ended up falling pregnant in year one, so it was a little bit quicker than anticipated, but it gave me real great flexibility. It meant that I could choose when I worked. But to a certain extent, there's so much about working for yourself that people don't talk about. You know, you can literally put down your tools from your day job, but then you've got to do and be all the other things. And obviously, a large proportion of that is marketing, networking, advertising yourself, how you get known out there. But then there's also the paperwork side, the chasing invoices, the doing your finances, all that kind of stuff. And there's so much more to it than just doing the part of the job that you love. You can be great at doing something, but then you still got to do all those other, fulfill all those other roles. And I really did enjoy it. I think once I'd had my first child, I changed the way I marketed and advertised myself and the way that I approached companies. And then once I'd had my second and COVID hit, pandemic hit, everything changed again completely. And I think I'd always had a thought about after I'd had the second and had to about going back in somewhere slightly more stable, because particularly in what I do, if I had an MD of a business call me at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and need to speak to me, I couldn't really say to them, to a certain extent, hang on a minute, I've just got my kids, I'll call you back. And obviously I think the pandemic has helped that. People are more accepting of you having kids and working from home and things like that, because that's what everybody had to do. But I found, particularly in what I do, because my client market is businesses, senior managers, leaders in businesses, and they're in the office, they're working. So for me to say I could only work between certain hours actually kind of restricted things. And what it meant was, on the days when I had, like with my littlest, in the back of my mind, I always knew I had something to do, or someone would ask for a call and I'd have to try and fit it in. And actually, after a few years of doing that with the two of them, I kind of decided I wanted to go back in and actually have more stable hours and stable work. I mean, don't get me wrong, I still, every now and then, I'm going through my phone one of the days when I don't work. But nobody in the business is expecting me to do something by a certain date, because they know we've set out, you know, the store, we know exactly when I'm working. And that pressure's off. And the idea that I get back to getting having a monthly salary. I mean, I'm coming up to my first summer holidays where we're going to have to juggle childcare and all that. So, you know, maybe a different story come September. But for me, having a bit of stability, having regular hours, regular days, and being able to walk away from work and be at home, as opposed to constantly always having one ear to thinking what work emails are coming through, or who's going to call me. You know, my personal mobile phone has been my work mobile phone for 7 years. So I'd have to answer every call with, good afternoon, Nikki Freshwater. I wasn't able to just relax when a call came through. So for me, it's been almost the complete opposite. And I do see a lot of, particularly women, but talking about working, going to work for themselves, because they think sometimes it's easier, there's more flexibility. And there is, I suppose, if you want to just have something small that you work on that you enjoy doing, but you're kind of dabbling. But actually, if you want, I suppose, more of a career, I feel like you're then too invested that you never stop. You're constantly working.
Yeah, and it's an interesting perspective, because obviously I am self-employed and I've done on that way around. And someone said to me yesterday, in fact, that running your own business, 80% of it is probably the job you don't want to do.
Yeah.
So 20% is your passion. Mm-hmm. 80% is the admin, the marketing, all of that sort of stuff. And I think that stat, people just don't realise, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it can be quite a rude shock.
Yeah. And I think if you really are that passionate about what you do, it will drift into everyday life. And then that's when you realise that you're never stopping. And that's what I didn't want to get to. Mm. I didn't want to always be. And I think it hit home really because my youngest is going to school in September. I didn't want to lose this year or these 9 months that I had with her to me having to, oh, I'm just going to pick that up. Oh, I'm just going to go. Mummy's just going to go and do an email. Or mummy's just going to take a call. I didn't want that for this period of time. I really wanted to be able to concentrate on it. And the idea of when I'm at home, I'm at home, or when I'm not working as such, I'm not working. Because I do find if you're really passionate about something, you end up constantly doing it because there's almost no barriers to a certain extent.
Yeah. So what was the sort of process you went through, I suppose, mentally? Because I think any change that we make, whether it's from permanent to self-employed, whether it's complete career change, any of these decisions have to be done with a decent amount of research, due diligence. Am I making the right decision for me and for the family, etc.? So how do you think you made that call to go back into employment? Yeah.
So I suppose, again, I'm sort of slightly privileged in that I obviously work in HR. So I work in a department that my entire career I have worked with parents coming back to work, mums coming back from maternity leave, a career change, all that sort of stuff. And I suppose because I know the options that are available to me, work's one of the few things that I can say I'm good at that. So I know I'm good at it. So from my point of view, I know that whoever I was going to work for, I was going to do a great job regardless of how many days I was there. And I do think that the pandemic has changed people's opinions on. I mean, don't get me wrong, I still think there are people who, you know, might have made a comment when they realised I was only going to be in the office 3 days a week because I need to be working 3 days a week and another woman doing part-time, etc. But I suppose I looked at what we wanted as a family, and I, you know, didn't want to go back full time. You know, was never a thought that would enter our discussions. But there are things that we want to do, and from a point of view of, well, we're heading into, you know, potentially heading into more recession, the type of work that I was doing, the way the work was happening. And it was a case of, well, actually, for us as a family, me going back part time, and very lucky, the level that I was working at, I was able to just step straight back into that level. So I do get that for some people, if they're changing career or they are having to take a couple of steps back, if they've been out of it, although I've been out of being in-house, I've obviously been doing this job. And a lot of the skills that I've learned from working with so many different organizations I can then bring to wherever I go. So I think we kind of looked at, you know, what we wanted as a family, and I think that's what everybody does, isn't it? Where especially you get the families where there's a stay-at-home parent, they have that thought process first. They go, right, what does the life that we want, what does that look like? And for us, there's lots of things we want to do and places we want to take the kids. And me being back in house, although it's meant slightly more childcare for the children at the moment, actually the win of it is all the other things that we're able to do, the stability of an income, the second income, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Oh, you might convince me to go back into employment. You keep talking like this. And then before we started recording, we were talking about how you've got quite a unique perspective in that you've seen, I suppose, two sides of the coin when it comes to especially returning to work and women returning to work. Because when you were in HR prior to having your own kids, you were dealing with obviously those kind of issues and managing those transitions for people. Then obviously you were self-employed and had a different perspective, and now you're in employment as an HR professional with children. So now you've got, again, a different lens, I suppose. What are some of the themes or the experience or insights that you've had with those sort of two different angles, do you think?
I mean, I suppose I've always worked in relatively male-dominated industries. So from an early point of my career, and just the type of person that I am, I've always sort of been a little bit on the offensive of, just because it's HR doesn't mean it's a soft and fluffy. You know, we're not here for tears, tissue and tea type role. And as I've really developed on in my career, it's about looking at the commercial aspects of how we're running the business, how we're achieving our goals and how we're making profit at the end of the day to employ people so they can pay their mortgages. It kind of, I think of it very much more that way. And so as I've been dealing with women coming back from maternity leave and things like that, the way that I tend to look at it is, the skills and the knowledge and experience that those people have so much more beneficial to the business than the fact that they might only be doing 60% of the hours that they used to do. And I've always been a big advocate of things like, you know, wearing a tie doesn't make you good at your job. Sitting at your desk all day doesn't mean that, you know, you've been here for 12 hours. Actually, that probably means you're not so good, because there's either far too much to do or you're not able to do it in the time that you're given. So sort of as people think of HR, they think of hiring and firing. They do think of that kind of tears, tissue and tea part. But actually, if you think about it from a sort of a commercial decision, if I've got somebody here who's worked in, whether it's in my company or another company, for years, got years of experience, gone off and had their maternity, gone off and had a career break, but they want to come back and they want to work. And I don't think you've ever seen people work quite as hard as people that know they're in really privileged positions, because they know they've got things that work around their family. Yeah. The fact that you can get support and cover and extra support from people, I try to take it very much, and I always have done, from much more of a actually what's right for the business. Because I know it probably would be quite easy for people to look at me and be like, oh, she's a woman in HR, she can be soft on the women, all these women that want part-time, et cetera, et cetera. But actually, it's always been about what works for the business. So many more benefits. I think there's always been a lot of focus on, you come in, you do a job, you're 9 to 5, Monday to Friday, whatever. But there's so many different options and ways of doing things. It doesn't have to be about just females and just, you know, people coming back from maternity leaves. It's looking at, as a business, what's the right business decision to make, and losing people and skills and knowledge out of the business just because they happen to only want to work 4 days a week is a ludicrous decision, because of the cost it would take to replace them, and the loss of the skills and the knowledge. So I think I always had that picture and that view. And then it was very interesting when I first started going back to work after having my first child, and then obviously a second. It's almost impounded. It's almost even more that I'm aware. Well, like I said, I know I'm good at my job, and that hasn't disappeared just because I happen to have procreated. And it's even more, I've got even more of that passion now, to show that actually, because I was talking to someone recently, she kept talking about having had a career break. And I said, oh, how long were you off for? Oh, I wasn't off. I just stopped my training, like my additional training, while I had my kids. And I'm going to pick that back up again. But whoever called that career break? Career break. That's just you taking a pause and some additional training. That's not, and it's the mindset of people being made to feel like the time they want to look after their kids as a negative. And so yeah, it's very different doing it now as a parent. I do understand that whole, you know, those hours in the morning when you're running around and at some point you've screamed at someone to put their shoes on, and then all of a sudden you get into work and you're like, okay, now I can get on with my day job. I get that more now, obviously, because I'm doing it. But it's always been about thinking about how the business doesn't lose skills and knowledge and experience of these fantastic people just because they might happen to not want to work the hours that socially have been prescribed as the norm.
Yeah, and I think to your point, I've met countless parents, mothers and fathers, who on their return to work after, especially after first child, have an absolute renewed passion and energy.
Yeah.
Way beyond before, because you know there's suddenly a much clearer purpose, I suppose, to the work they're doing and why they're doing it and who they're doing it for. So actually you can't underestimate that commitment. Yeah. I think actually,
yeah, and you know they say if you want something done, give it to a busy person. You know, there's no one busier than parents of young children. We know we've got a finite amount of time to do things, and yeah, you know, there are certain days I have in my calendar, you've got to leave at 5 because you are on pickup, but it just means I get everything done, and I sort of cut out the faff almost. You know, you can really focus, and that's so true of any working parent, I think.
Yeah. And then you've talked about male dominated industries before. Do you think, and again across your experience years ago and now, has there been a positive shift in fathers taking, not just take parental leave, but also asking for more flexibility potentially just within the day-to-day job?
Yeah, I mean, a lot more men that I'm aware of take paternity leave. A lot more companies are more accommodating to what that looks like. I don't think I've ever dealt with a man taking shared parental leave, but I think some of that is because the process is so convoluted and difficult to work it out. And actually, funnily enough, we were speaking to some of our Canadian friends, and they did exactly that for their second child. He took a couple of months at home with the kid, and their process just seems to be so much easier. And I think some of the problem here is the process and all of that kind of thing is quite convoluted. I speak to these days, a lot more dads that are willing to say, and actually had it this morning, can you push that meeting back to 9:30 because I'm doing school run this morning? So many more of that than there ever used to be. And I mean, and you know, where I am at the moment, people are in work at 7:00 in the morning. People have been working night shifts. So for a senior manager to say to me, can you push that back to 9:30 because I'm doing the school run, is amazing. Yes, of course I can. So yes, there is more of it. I think sometimes the processes are a bit too convoluted. And unfortunately for people, men who sit in industries or sit in cultures where they have seen how women are treated when they take their time off, are just less likely to do it for themselves because of it. But yes, as I've seen, I suppose, as I've got to the age where more of my peers, because for a long time, I was sort of sitting at that management level and I was the one without the kids and I was sort of the younger one. And now I'm at that age where a lot of my peers are my age and we've all got children and they do take that opportunity. Oh, I'm going because I've got to take the kid to the sports day or whatever. And I think some of it isn't rolled down as such. So it's fine for a director to say, I'm getting off, I'm seeing the kids' Christmas show, but the operator out on site can't do that. So there's still some of that, the levelling within the company does have an impact on, you know, how flexible they are with it. But there's a lot more that men do these days that they are open about. Yeah, you know, oh, I've got to go now, I've got to go and pick the kids up or whatever. And to be fair, I have made a point since I had the kids. I don't apologise for it. Manager came in the other day and I literally had my laptop in my lap, was closing everything up. And I went, I've got to go. I'm sort of backstop for picking the kids up. There's no one else. It's just, yeah, okay then. And I won't ever hide it because that's life.
Yeah. And it also comes down to your confidence because you said you're confident in your job.
Yeah.
You know you can do a good job. So because you've got such strong self-belief, which is great, and I wish more people had that, then when you say, no, actually, I'm leaving now, it's because you know that it's not going to impact on you and your belief in your own work. But yeah. I think where a lot of women do struggle, especially coming back again the first time after first children, is that confidence taking a real knock. Again, back to the cultural point, the perception of them, and there's a term called mummy tracking, where you know you come back to work after your child and then you're labelled. So, oh, because you're now a mum, that means you'll probably want to work part-time, does it? Or because you're now a mum, you'll probably want to leave early, or all of these sort of things, which these labels which are sort of applied to us culturally in certain organisations. And then, of course, it's very difficult then to have the confidence in what you're doing because you feel like that judgment's there. And then you think, well, I can't say no because what if that, you know, looks bad on me, et cetera. So I suppose where do you get that confidence from? As in, are there any kind of practical, I suppose, tips or insights?
I am one for saying mantras to myself, or I'd love to be able to say, yeah, I do this and that. I don't. That's not me, actually. It's very, very un-me. I suppose, yeah, because I suppose, as I said, it's the one thing that I've always known. I'm quite good at this job. I can, you know, I can do well. And I've always been able to then present myself to say very much, this is how I do the job. If you don't want me to, you want somebody else to do it in a different way, that's fine. This is how I do. I can't change how I do the job because that would mean changing everything about what I do and would be very uncomfortable and wearing, you know. So I have always been quite happy to say to a, you know, if I'm going into an interview or to a client, this is how I do it, you know, that's either going to work for you or it isn't. And I don't really know where that would come from because there's not a lot of that kind of confidence in the rest of my life, I'll tell you that. But maybe because earlier on in my career, I sort of had a manager who showed me more of this, you know, more of what I would call the commercial hate side of HR. They showed me the options open to me and they just let me go with it. And I spent a lot of time, Google was my friend, you know, what does a HR business partner take into a meeting with a director? And I just had to build it and I just had to do it. And I got that opportunity and it did change my career in the way I want to do things. And I suppose maybe it's because I just found the bit that works for me. And I think that's the thing. If you're in, maybe you're in a job where your manager isn't necessarily supportive, or it's a job that you don't love, or it's a job that you don't feel like you're very good at, it might just be you haven't just found that thing that's right for you. And it is strange because I have been saying recently, I'm happier at work than I ever remember being. I was never unhappy in jobs. But, you know, someone said to me, oh, 3 months in, how you find it? I'm like, yeah, still enjoying it. Because I think because I'm given the freedom and I'm given the ability to do the things that I need to do, there's hard parts to it. I'm using my brain, you know, I'm doing the things that I know I'm good at as a person. And I think that's because I found the thing that works for me. And I've always had plenty of things going on outside of HR. I've tried so many other hobbies and interests and different little side jobs and things like this. But this has always been the thing that I've stuck to. And maybe that's just why it works and why when I'm at work, I'm not thinking about the kids, you know, in that way. I'm not, you know, daydreaming about days. Obviously, I'm always daydreaming about my holidays, but I don't have that, oh, God, I've got to go back into work today. And it might just be because I seem to have found the thing. And I'm so conscious when I talk to people, and I have always been, that when they come and talk to me about, you know, development or their roles, it's not just about their role here. You know, it's about actually what works for them and their life and their career. And sometimes that's within the organisation I'm working in, and sometimes it's not. And I think maybe that's because I've been lucky enough to fall into and find the thing that just works for me.
Mm. I think I'm going to tell you to immediately not say lucky and not say fall into. Because I suspect it's not luck and you haven't just fallen into it. You've, you know, the choices you've made along your career, and as you say, they're kind of understanding which bits work, which bits don't work, which bits you're passionate about, which bits you're less passionate about, have taken you down a certain path to choose the kind of roles that are going to work for you.
Yeah And it's really interesting because as you know, my brother and I, we graduated at the same time, and he went into a graduate scheme in one company and he was there for 17 years, and I don't think I've been in one organisation longer than 3 years at the moment, and I've dotted around. And it's been really interesting to, he's worked in a lot of different departments in the one company. It's a really sort of interesting charter in the course to see. And he's always been happy in what he did predominantly, and I've always been happy in what I did, but we just took such completely different route. And I think, and I've got plenty of friends that have done that, worked in big organisations but moved around within them. And I just think sometimes it's just down to what works for you. And when they talk about, if you find something you love, you'll never work a day in your life. You do work hard, and you do all those other things that we talked about. But it's the, if you enjoy the basics of what you do, then 80% of your job you can be happy doing. And so I don't necessarily agree that if you do something you love, you'll never work another day in your life, because it's still work. It's still hard. It has its down days. It has its moments when you look at something and you're like, oh, no. But I think there's just that inherently, you don't dread going to work, you don't dread doing things, because you actually enjoy the bulks of what you do. And so I think it's more that. I don't think it's about people trying to find pie in the sky ideas of what they could do to make them happier. It's focusing in a little bit like you do with the kids on what do they enjoy, because you're always better at what you enjoy. What do you enjoy and what are you good at, and finding a path for you within that.
Yeah, it's something I talk about quite a lot in my coaching, because I just love the framework, the Ikigai, the Japanese framework, well-being framework, where you look at what you love, what you're good at, what the world needs and what you can be paid for.
Yeah.
And trying to find the balance in your life around those four different areas.
Yeah.
And I think what you said earlier about, again, it's not all about work. So obviously work is there for a reason, but it's very important for all of us at the moment. But you alluded to the sort of other things that you do, and hobbies and side hustles and things like that, which tap into passions and give you a different experience, a different enjoyment from someone from a different place.
Yeah.
So then the work is balanced off with other things you're doing. So tell me about a bit of maybe other things that you've done and experimented with.
I've done all sorts. From at one point I did photography outside of work, and then I also set up a singles company to run singles nights in Essex. Definitely the definition of the devil makes work for idle hands. And that was, you know, before kids and that. But now I've always had a love of travelling, and so I now am an independent travel agent, so I can not only book our own trips, but I can book other people's. And I have that. I run a couple of Instagram pages that are around sort of travel hacks with kids and things like that. So I do all those things because I enjoy them on the side. I don't necessarily do them because I want them to bring in an additional income stream, which a lot of people do, and a lot of people can be really successful with them. But I do them because I enjoy what I do. And I find these other little snippets and you know, making the videos and sharing hacks and tips and things like that, I find that really interesting, and there's a really good community out there of people. And it can be really, really lonely when you first become a parent. And it can be even lonelier still if you aren't happy in what you do with work. So there's a whole tranche of people that are on the internet now that share things that they do. And, you know, sometimes you realise that you're watching someone, you know, cooking their dinner and you're like, why am I watching them? Why am I not cooking my own dinner? But, you know, and actually, but there's just there's a comfort in building a community externally. You can follow the most random people. I follow a farmer now and I watched a cow give birth the other day. The things that you're able to do at the same time, and particularly for new parents when you've got time, you know, you're up in the night with feeding and you've got kind of that dead time where you're stuck doing something, but equally you're not doing something. There's a whole world out there of people who want to show you that it's not all bad and that you do get through it, and the fun and the joy out of being a parent or being a working parent or sharing information. And I like to add a little bit of that from my point of view when we, you know, on the travels that we do. So I do that on the side. But I've always done things like that because, as I said, it's finding the joy in the things that you do, finding things that you enjoy. And it doesn't bother me that I've got like 300 followers. I do it because I enjoy it.
300 sounds pretty good. And I think, like you said, I think it's about not just finding joy in things, but having that diversity. I suppose keeping your mind engaged, and especially the community part you mentioned, which is, I think, the positive side of social media, is especially during lockdown when we were so isolated. Yeah. And then even now with hybrid working from home, it's still very isolating for many people who aren't going into the office as much as they'd like potentially. So finding your tribe, I suppose, in the online world.
Yeah, that's definitely what it is. And I'm acutely aware that as in the next few years, the kids are going to start needing me to be physically in the building with them, but they're not necessarily going to want me with them. So it's finding other hobbies and things. You know, I've started growing veg in my garden, and I now follow a load of people online that give me tips and help on how to do that. And it's just building those communities and sort of helping you remember the things that you enjoy as a person, not just the things that you're supposed to enjoy as such as a parent, because there are parts of being a parent that are really hard and that we don't enjoy, and we have to get through them. But utilizing other avenues, it doesn't have to be that you pick this up and it becomes a second job and, you know, you're trying to sell to people. It could just be that you enjoy doing something and you take the time to do that, because that actually is what relaxes you.
Yep. I think people don't focus on that enough, and it's a self-care piece, isn't it, as well, especially as working parents.
Yeah. For me, I always spend many waking moments searching for holidays and looking at where we can go next. Now, having the ability to actually do it within systems and then being able to share and, you know, share little organisation tips and things that you could do on planes and in car journeys and things like that, it is self-care for me because it's the things I enjoy.
Mm. And then just back to the cultural piece we talked about before, and how important it is that organisational culture has to support working parents and people coming back to work. You've obviously seen, I imagine, great examples of culture, company culture, which support parents in the right way, and probably some not so great examples as well. So I suppose from the great examples point, that's why I also want to shine a light on those rather than focus on the negatives. What could organisations be doing to really support their parents in a genuine way rather than a sort of policy tick box kind of way?
Yeah, and I mean, one of the things that I think supporting all employees, regularly talking to people, you know, and again, I wouldn't want to, at the risk of sounding typically HR, if you're not having regular one-to-ones with your team, how do you know what's going on in their life? How do you get to understand how they're dealing with what they're doing? And that shouldn't stop because somebody is part-time or because somebody is taking time off. It's having those real genuine relationships. Some of that also comes back to, well, the way an organisation is structured. You get managers who are literally managing 20 people. It's too many people to be managing. So a lot of the time, organisations aren't even structured in such a way that that they're able to have managers have genuine people management relationships with people. And then generally, the culture, developing a culture, is starting from the top. It is, you know, when the MD sets a meeting at 5:30 on a Friday afternoon. You know, it's starting from the top and thinking about, actually, how do my teams want to work? And if you want to attract the top talent and the best in what you do, you've got to think about where those people are and what they're looking for. You talk about, you know, working from home and things like that. There's a lot of companies now that don't want people working from home, but they have to look at the demographics of the people that they're trying to attract. And if all those people want to work from home, then you have to sort of rethink. So it's the business needs to think about it. And it shouldn't just be about tick boxes of, oh, we did this, you know, well-being at work thing, or we did this other thing. And, you know, we've set out a policy, or we've, you know, everybody wore coloured socks for the day. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not about just those small things. It's about inherently day to day. And in the leadership team, the language they're using, the way that they're talking, and things like leading by example, of not sitting here until 9 o'clock at night just for the sake of it. It's leading by example, making sure that the business values really, really meet that. And again, that's, I suppose that's why when I talk about HR, when I talk about sort of more the strategic commercial side, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Because all of that rolls down into, yes, somebody taking maternity leave and having their kit days, coming back and going back into their job, all the kind of basics. But it's got to come from the bigger picture piece at the top. You can't have a great flexible and sort of adaptable workforce if at the top there's nothing in the values or the business strategy about the people.
Mm.
It's got to be in your plan. That part can't be ignored.
Yeah, it's exactly why I launched my second podcast, which by the time this airs will be live, the Parent Equation Culture Shift, to show actually that organisations can create a cultural change from the top down.
Yeah, and it can happen. And yes, it's easier to a certain extent in smaller organisations because they have less of the red tape to go through. And then equally, you can say, yes, it's easier in larger organisations because they have, I suppose, more of the capacity and more of the funding to be able to do things. But actually, if on a day-to-day basis, the leaders of the business aren't living and breathing the values and that kind of culture, then it's never going to roll down and it's never going to happen that way.
Mm.
So there's balances on either side. Small businesses are much more flexible, but probably don't have the funds to be able to support a lot of that. But larger organisations who maybe do some of these things are very much just, you know, for the tick box, or we have this returners programme, but actually how effective is it? And all that kind of stuff. So it's got to be lived, as I say, the values of an organisation need to be lived and not laminated. It's all too easy to just stick them up on the wall and say, this is what we're doing. And actually, if the leadership and sort of rolling down through management isn't actually living and breathing it, it will never change.
Yeah, I love that phrase. Live, not laminated. And then what do you think's next for you? So obviously you've taken these, what we now know are conscious decisions to take this career path rather than it being luck. What do you think the next, as your kids get older and move through primary school, where do you think you might see your career going?
My husband asked me this the other day. He said, do you think you'll ever go back to full time? I don't envisage that happening, because I see, particularly in this day and age, I see the issues that can come with children as they grow when it comes to social media and telephones and bullying and harassment and all this kind of stuff that happens. And also knowing that the education system that they go through is very much geared towards one way of learning. And I would say probably myself and my husband are quite good examples of that. I was a goody two-shoes at school. I never did anything wrong. I kind of followed the path I thought I needed to follow. He went to school to see his friends predominantly, but have both equally managed to carve out great careers and things that we enjoy doing. And I'm very conscious that as the kids grow older, that's not my then, I suppose, that's not my note to then go, oh, you can go back 5 days a week. I want to be able to provide that, the whole surrounding support. And if it's something that can't come from school, which, you know, often it can't because of all the constraints that they have, that I want to be able to be there to support that. So whilst I want to further my career and, you know, be here for a while and progress on, I don't, it's not a case of, well, when they go to senior school, I'm going to go back full time, because I think almost it's almost more important then that I am around, I'm listening to them.
Yeah.
I'm there when they, you know, sometimes when they come home from school, and I'm seeing what they're talking about and how they're feeling, because they're all the signs that you can miss. And, you know, the amount of tragic stories that we hear these days about young kids and things that they've been through and things that happen to them, and then decisions they make that impact on the rest of their lives. I want to be there to support that. I mean, I don't know if I can use that excuse when they're like 25 and moving out of me, not, but I just, and to be fair, even before I had the kids, in the job, in-house job I was in before I started working for myself, I was talking to my manager, I said, like, my role doesn't exist anymore, you need to make me redundant. what can we do? How can we keep you in the business? And I said, I don't want to work full time anymore. I have a family. I have a life I want to live. Mm. And that was before kids were even, you know, before I'd even met my husband. They weren't even a twinkle in my eye at that point. I had elderly grandparents. I wanted to travel. There was also, I didn't want to do 5 days a week slogging it out of work. And I think, I don't know that I ever will want to do that again.
I think you're right. It's not just parents. Obviously, everyone has their own particular circumstances that require a life beyond work.
Yeah.
So, Nikki, thank you so much for sharing today. It's obviously not just your story, but also your insights from the HR perspective. And if people want to find out more about you and your travel hacks, where can they find all those things?
I'm on LinkedIn, Nikki Freshwater. So you come and find me and say hello over there. I'm on Instagram under Travel Hacks with Kids. So we put things up there. The two tend to be quite separate. Don't talk about the other as much on them because they are two very more like the more sort of corporate HR world and then the traveling around dealing with the kids thing. So come and find me there and say hello.
Right. Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Nikki. Have a great rest of the day.
Thanks. Bye.
To work with me, find out more at aishamari.com, connect with me on LinkedIn, or check out my free resources and quizzes at aishamari.com/resources.